Good morning. I think we have a quorum, so if everybody could take their seat. Good morning. It's Wednesday, October 2nd, 2013. The Dallas City Council briefing meeting will be called to order. The city of Dallas is in business, and we're doing the citizens' business. May not be every place in the country, but it is here in the city of Dallas. We've just been through a great time of the year with the Jewish holidays, and so I'm very pleased to have. Can we please grab a seat? And please be quiet, Ms. Davis. Thank you. We've been through a very important part of the Jewish calendar with the Jewish holidays, and Rabbi Paley is a wonderful leader in our community. He has been with Temple Shalom in Mr. Kleinman's district since 2004, and is native Buckeye by birth, and also he went to Ohio State University. But he's a Texan at heart. He holds a master's degree in Hebrew letters from HUCJIR and a bachelor's degree from the Ohio State University. He's happily married and a proud father of two children, Molly and Sammy. Following Rabbi Paley's invocation, I'll have Mr. Kleinman lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Distinguished members of our City Council, dear guests and dear friends, it's an honor to stand before you today, once again having the privilege of sharing a brief moment to bring words of what I hope will be words of hope and encouragement and blessing. I know we have a lot of work to do today, and indeed, governing is a daunting task. It's an often chaotic and tempestuous world in which we live. Uncertainty and fear and doubt and despair abound. Hope, encouragement, and blessing seem distant and often difficult to feel. And yet we know that God desires exactly that from each of us every single day. We know that the struggles to unlock the chains of wickedness and untie the cords of lawlessness are our charge indeed. To be a part of the struggle to let the oppressed go free and break off every yoke. We know that it is our struggle to banish from our midst the menacing hand, evil speech, and we know it is our struggle to offer compassion to the hungry, the needy, and the stranger. And when we do, then shall the light of the Holy One shine amidst the darkness. Therefore, O guardian of life and liberty, may our mayor and our council, these brave men and women, find examples of courage and compassion. Always meet your guidance and protection. Teach them to give thanks for what they have by sharing it with those who are in need. Keep their eyes open to the wonders of creation and alert to the care of the earth. May they never be lazy in the work of peace. And may we together honor those who have died in defense of our ideals. Grant these incredible leaders wisdom and forbearance. May they govern with justice and compassion. And help all of us to appreciate one another and to respect the many ways that we may be of service to each other, to our city, and to the Almighty. May our homes always be safe from affliction and strife, from their great words and because of their great work. And may our great city be sound in body and spirit. Amen.
Amen. Mr. Kleinman.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A beautiful invocation, Rabbi. Thank you. With that, we've got some special presentations. Ms. Davis.
Let Thank you,
guys,
Mr. Mayor.
Guys, please give Ms. Davis respect.
Thank you so much for letting me do this special presentation. If the Real Estate Council would come up, I surely would appreciate it. Linda, who is the Executive Director of the Real Estate Council and my friend for a number of years. Thank you so much. Linda, this is a special recognition for you, the Real Estate Council, and I'm not going to read all of it. I'm just going to read some of it and just to thank you for all the service that you do here in our great city. Whereas the Real Estate Council consists of 1,300 commercial real estate professionals, 500 member company who share a passion for shaping the future through donating their expertise, building alliances, and raising funds to strengthen the community. And I know you work with us when I was with Inner City Community Development Corporation back in the day. Whereas the Real Estate Council plays an important role by helping the land bank to operate. Whereas a special recognition and to thanks to their company by providing pro bono ad lien legal service valued at more than $1.6 million since the inception of the land bank. So I want to thank you for that. Whereas 2,200 properties has been submitted for foreclosure, over 1,600 lawsuits have been filed, 873 properties have been purchased by the land bank, and over 400 properties have been sold to developers within 60 pending sales, and 250 affordable homes have been constructed and sold to low-income families. Now, therefore, I, Carolyn R. Davis, on behalf of the Mayor, Mike Rollins, and the City of Dallas, and the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend a special recognition to you, my friend, the Real Estate Council, and some of the lawyer firms who have worked with you, and I'm not going to name all of them. For example, Hayes and Bones, Jackson Walker, Joan Day, Kirk Russ Coleman, and Logan P.C., Mucha Hart and Corp PC, Thomas Knight, and Gorthan and Mansion LLPC for their service and support to the land bank. On this second day of October 2013, I would like to present you with a special recognition.
Well, thank you very much, Councilman Davis. And I also want to introduce Robin Minnick, who runs our foundation. She's the one that wrangles all these law firms every single day. The Land Bank program started the Real Estate Council Foundation in 2004, starting working with the Housing Department. And our very generous law firm partners stepped up and have been doing this since 2004. And we appreciate the recognition for them because they've done all the work. It's provided some really valuable training for young lawyers to go into the courtroom, but at the same time, it's really done a great service for the City of Dallas. So we thank you very much for this recognition, and thank you.
Thank you. Normally we take a picture, but we don't have a camera. That's okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda. Mr. Allen.
Just real quick, too, I just want to give my kudos to the Real Estate Council and what they do, and particularly the just their heart, their kind heart that they have when it comes to our kids, the educational component that y'all put together and what y'all do. My hat's off to you. I've watched you over the years, and the good that y'all do for this city of Dallas, without question, is we just can't say enough nice things about you guys. So y'all just keep it up. Thank you, Mayor.
We do have a camera. Linda, can you guys come up? We have to take a picture, and we will download it to you.
Thank you. Mr. Cadane.
Yeah, while you all are getting the camera, Linda, thank you guys for everything you do there. I'll tell you, you're a vital part in keeping our city moving forward with all of the folks you have there and all the developers you deal with. So thank you so much for everything the Real Estate Council does in the city. Appreciate you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. I can't agree more with Mr. Allen and Mr. Cadane. When I look at the important assets that this city has, the Real Estate Council is way up on that list. I mean, we are a much richer city in so many ways because of the professionalism, the strategic insight and the hard work that the Real Estate Council does for us. So please, on behalf of the City Council, we wholeheartedly endorse Ms. Davis's proclamation. Thank you. Again, it's early morning. And would you tell the board, really, the City Council says thank you. Okay? All right. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, thank you. The next special recognition is for National Recovery Month 2013. Joe Powell, my friend, come on up, and who now APA is in the South Dallas Fair Park area on MLK. He just got a special recognition from President Obama, and so I'm very, very happy about that. Thank you, Joe, and for your team for coming down this evening to City Hall. I'm not going to read all. I'm going to read some. Whereas behavioral health is an essential part of health and one of the overall wellness and prevention, prevented work treatment, especially if people can and do overcome and can recover from substance use and mental disorder. And whereas each day millions of Americans take courage steps towards long-term recovery from drug and alcohol addiction and mental health issues. Revealing the transformation power of recovery in all people have the fundamental and the value to be accepted and treated with respect and dignity in this country and the wealth. Whereas individuals should have a full participation in the community life, including economic advancement, fairness, and for fair housing, quality education, and positive opportunity to benefit from and contribute to the mental culture and social that it brings them in this country. Whereas substance use and mental disorder are a serious public health problem in our city and in this country. In 2012, 4 million people received treatment for substance use disorder. The 2013 National Survey on Drug Use and Health. We must continue to reach the millions and millions who are in need of our service. Whereas to help people achieve long-term recovery and learn how recovery benefits the nation's overall well-being, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Service, HHS, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration, the White House Office of the National Drug Control Policy, and the Association of Persons Affected by Addiction, APAA, and that's the organization that Joe runs, invites all residents of the Dallas area to support this year's theme, Join the Voice for Recovery Together on a Pathway to Wellness. Now, therefore, I, Carolyn R. Davis, on behalf of our mayor, Mike Rollins, and the whole entire Dallas City Council of the City of Dallas, do hereby extend a special recognition to advocacy providing of addiction, mental health service, and the support and the recovery for this well cause. On this day, the 2nd of October of 2013, Joe, I'd like to present you this special recognition.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Councilwoman Davis, Mayor, and all of the City Council. Appreciate it very much. September is Recovery Month, and now we are, of course, October the 2nd. But we've been celebrating Recovery Month and coming here. This is my 10th year coming up to the City Council, picking up the proclamation for Recovery Month, celebrating Recovery Month. And it is a federal government initiative that started 20 years ago to honor and celebrate people that are in long-term recovery. Again, my name is Joe Powell, and I'm a person in long-term recovery, and what that means is that I haven't had a drink of alcohol in 25 years. and any other drugs in 30 years. But I want to also let you know that, of course, working in Dallas as a peer organization for the last 15 years and as a licensed drug and alcohol counselor 20 years here in Dallas, that the friends that I have to my left who I bring up that I want you to know who provide recovery support services, Gwen, who's our, of course, recovery coach that worked at APA, and then, of course, there's some of our advocates and recovery organizations, of course, Janie Metzinger with MHA, okay, Sherry Guzimano with not only NAMI, also with Green Oaks Hospital, and then Marcia Rogers with NAMI, and a good friend of mine, of course, Sharon DeBlanc with Value Options. John Dorheim, who's also a community leader and helps us in so many ways, former with Green Oaks. And then we have Matt, and Matt is with MHA. I forgot Matt's last name again. Matt Roberts, that's right, with MHA, Mental Health Administration, the Mental Health Association. So these are friends of mine that, of course, for years, the last 10, 20 years that I've worked with, but also the recovery community is number one. I didn't want to get a recognition with my name on it, but mainly for the recovery community, and we know that the council really helps us out and provides support to all of us. So I want to thank you for City Councilwoman Davis.
Yes, and also Joe is looking of doing a jobs opportunity program of a new facility on Martin Luther King that will try to provide jobs to those who are trying to recover and get their lives back together. So we're looking at we might need coming back to the city council for some support. There's a building across the street from the Martin Luther King Center that we will be raising money for to rehab that building, and it will have jobs. A program, it will have education skills program, and it has some other entities inside this building right across the street from the Martin Luther King Center. We have done the drawing on the building, so now we just got to get out and start raising the money for the building. And so I'm excited to pull up my sleeve, and so let's get busy and start raising the money and do what we can to make this a reality. Joe, thank you for being in South Dallas, and thank you for everything that you do, my brother.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a picture.
Thank you, Ms. Davis, and thank you, Joe. Appreciate you being here. A couple of people wanted to say something, so will you get pictures? Mr. Caraway.
Yeah, Joe, while you're taking that picture, I just want to say to you, for all your efforts and your 25 years and the things that you continue to do in the leadership, thank you very much, okay?
Thank you, Judge Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilwoman Davis and Mr. Powell, thank you for bringing this very, very important issue to our attention yet again. There are very, very, very few families in America who have not been touched in some way by alcohol or substance abuse. Very few families. I would venture to say that there aren't any families who in some way have not been touched by these diseases. I am happy for the work that you've done. I'm grateful for the work that you've done and for what you continue to do. Please continue with the work you're doing because it is so important, not just to your community, but to my community, to the entire city, to the state, and to the nation. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Judge. Well, thank you, and those are excellent presentations, Ms. Davis. Appreciate it. We will open it up to our open microphone speakers, Ms. Rios.
Good morning. You have four individuals signed up to speak this morning. They are Elton Horton, Tamara Barrett, Lakeisha Johnson, and Freddie Delgado. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, profane, or pertinent remarks, or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council, will be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. You will need to state your name and address for the record, as well as address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Your first speaker, Elton Horton. Mr. Horton will be followed by Tamara Barrett.
You may proceed.
speaking. Yes, how are you doing? Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the City.
Good morning. If you can bring this, the microphone, just speak up a little louder.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the City Council. My name is... Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the City Council, Mayor. My name is Elton L. Horton. I'm a citizen of the City of Dallas. I'm a veteran of the Navy and the Army. And I'm here to address you concerning a realization of a creation of a land grant by the governor of Texas and the Land Commission in 1847. This is 7 years before Mr. Bryan received his patent. There is a patent and a file that was created for the area of a county named Robertson that covers the present-day counties of from Palo Pinto to Dallas, and it stretches between the Brazos and Trinity River to rest atop Brazos County. Now, this county existed in 1845 when we were added to the Union in 1845. During the war with Mexico, this patent and file and everything existed, and the governor and the land commissioner created in this county that existed a land grant. And I have been issued this land grant. So the present-day counties, Palo Pinto to Dallas and any of them in between Brazos and Trinity River to stop atop Brazos County, they were created on the old Robertson County of 1845. So this is understanding that Mr. Bryan's patent was issued in 1854. That is not older than 1847 for this area. So this is an issue that the City of Dallas needs to be in attention of, because I have the patent and it was issued to me from Commissioner Patterson down in Austin, Texas. So I have all these credentials and everything, and that is why I'm here to let the City of Dallas know about this. This area was created on a county that the government had created a patent for, and existence of this is present. So my name and number, if you need it and you're interested in getting with me, I have nothing else to do, because I plan to, like in the, in the history of land issuance, settlers and things, I plan to work for myself and use my land issuance to make a life for myself. So I am here in the City of Dallas. I have a phone, and I am where you can reach me, and we can start this business, because I have contacted Washington, Austin, and I've got in touch with the government so they can begin working with me and this area about this.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Horton. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Your next speaker is Tamara Barrett.
Thank you for letting me speak. To Mayor Rawlins, to the City Council, Dwayne Caraway. My name is Tamara Barrett. I'm a disabled veteran. I'm in the process of starting a community initiative program to bring awareness to violence in my community. Me, myself, was a victim of violence. And a friend of mine, less than 6 months ago, was killed. This year, a young man a block away from me was murdered. I asked for your help. In December, with God's help, I want to have a block party in my community to deal with this situation with violence in the community. I have this paper here where it shows this eight-year-old boy named DJ was shot in the face while playing in his yard. And I feel like If a baby can't play in the yard, and it's just getting to the point where somebody step forward and I'm taking on this mantle to step forward. And I will be working, and I'll be talking to some of the church community for their support in this situation, because it's getting to the point where, you know, it's just, you know, it just touched my heart that this little boy got shot in the face. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in, Mr. Carraway.
All right, Mr. Barrett, thank you for coming down. That's number one. And number two, my office is going to get with you before you leave.
Yes, sir.
And then Chief Brown and the others will begin to see what we need to do as relate to moving forward and keeping it and making it a safer community. And we'll put that block party together, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Lakeisha Johnson. Not present. Freddie Delgado. Not present. That concludes your speakers this morning. Your first vote item on your voting agenda is approved.
Before we do that, let me just kind of talk about the day, and then we'll get into the work, okay? So we've got our voting items, and then we'll have two briefings. What I'm going to do is, at that point, assuming that we don't spend all morning on the briefing, if we do, then this will change. Then I'll open the microphone back up to our afternoon speakers at that point. We will then adjourn into executive session. We will take a break at 11:30. Several of you are going to go to the Crow, and there will be buses downstairs to take to the Crow. Come back to the lunchroom. And over lunch at 1 o'clock, we will go into executive session. We'll come out of recess and go into the executive session. And I think we'll have, you know, 40, 45 minutes of discussion then. We will stay in the executive session and then go downstairs and go through our interview process for the city attorney. At that point, when that's finished, then we will adjourn the day's meeting. So the public stuff should be done in the morning, hopefully we'll get everybody over to the Crow Collection of Asian Art for the press conference there, starting at 11:30. Mr. Atkins.
You said after lunch, then the executive session, you said the interview. What time?
The interview is scheduled to start at 2 downstairs, and I'll have everybody's rooms that they're going to. We'll do that later.
Okay.
But how long that'll be probably about 2 to 6, I suspect, 2 to 5:30, 2 to 6, the way it's going to be running. Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. Let's begin our work.
Item number one is approval of minutes of the September 18, 2013 City Council meeting.
We have a motion and a second. Any edits? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Your next item, number two, is appointments to boards and commissions. You do have several, so it'll take a little bit to read all the names into the record. To the Animal Shelter Commission, Chris Watts is nominated by Councilmember Griggs. Molly DeVoe is nominated by Councilmember Medrano. Judith Burnett, nominated by Councilmember Grayson. Teresa Gubens is nominated by Councilmember Kingston, and all fill the general public qualification. To the Cultural Affairs Commission, Christopher Jackson, to fill the interested citizens category, is nominated by Councilmember Cadain. To the Community Development Commission, Michael P. Lavolo is nominated by Councilmember Medrano, and Christine L. Schwab is nominated by Councilmember Grayson. To the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board, Mario A. Gutierrez is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo, and Thomas Jefferson is nominated by Councilmember Allen. To the Judicial Nominating Commission, Brian Rutherford is nominated by Councilmember Kingston. To the Municipal Library Board, James Ed Palmer is nominated by Councilmember Kingston. To the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board, Geraldine McDaniel is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo. To the Park and Recreation Board, Rodney Schlosser is nominated by Councilmember Grayson. To the Permit and License Appeal Board, Charles Chick Cohen is nominated by Councilmember Allen. To the Senior Affairs Commission, Erwin W. Gart is nominated by Councilmember Kleinman, and Sylvia L. Benenson is nominated by Councilmember Gates. Both fill the 55 years plus of age category. Those were your individual nominees. For full council appointment, you have Cultural Affairs Commission. Paul D. Rich is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo to fill the interested citizen category. James Chris Wells is nominated by Councilmember Grayson and has a voluntary cultural board experience qualification. To the Reinvestment Zone 6 Board Farmers Market, James R. Ingendorf Jr. is nominated by Councilmember Cadane. To the Reinvestment Zone 16 Board Davis Garden, Reyna Gonzalez is nominated by Councilmember Griggs. To the Reinvestment Zone 19 Board Cypress Waters, Valeta Forsyth-Lill is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo, and Jose E. Gomez is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo. All the nominees for the Reinvestment Zone boards have filled the registered voter qualification. Those are your nominees this morning.
We've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Your briefings follow.
Thank you. We'll have two briefings this morning. Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mayor. Council, the FBI just recently released information regarding crime rates and population throughout the country. They also issued that information with the concern that we as cities throughout the country not compare ourselves to one another. However, that's not what we do. And so we're going to be receiving this morning a briefing by our chief on how the city of Dallas has fared over the last number of years. I think it will give a very good context of not only how we compare with other cities throughout the country, although there's hazards in that, but just how we compare to our own self in regards to our efforts over the last decade or two and further. So, Chief, with that, please.
Right, and I'd like to continue to emphasize that not only does the FBI discourage us from comparing, police departments don't like to be compared with each other. We compete, but we are, and we accept it and move forward. So let's go to slide one, if you don't mind. So what this year's report, 2012 report, comes out in September of the next year, says that we moved from 7th to 6th place, surpassing Chicago in that comparative analysis of crime. And using this analysis for 2012, it was the comparison of cities with a population of 1 million or more. Slide two. So over the last decade, Dallas has had its most significant crime reduction on record and the most significant crime reduction of any large 1 million population city. Let's go to slide three. And this shows that comparison over the last decade where you see that Dallas has reduced this crime 45% over that 10-year period from 2003 to 2012. Half of that 45% reduction has occurred since 2010. Slide four. So at this point, I'd like to revisit or review how this effort began in 2003. As you see on that arrow, in 2003, we were 10th of the 10 cities with a million population or more. And go to the next slide. And this was the headline that really displayed that we were the highest rated big city of the 10 million population cities in the country. And let me just add, this was the first comparative analysis of crime rates using FBI UCR data. And so we had not compared ourselves previous to 2003, but this headline was really front and center and really pushed us toward looking at a comparative analysis and challenging the department to move forward in getting out of that spot. And so it's hard to fathom, next slide please, that we were behind Detroit at that point. But also more importantly, we had been at that position of 10th place for the prior 6 years in a row. And we would remain at 10th for the subsequent 3 years. So we would end up being at 10th, at last place, for 9 consecutive years. So we were in a deep hole. Next slide. And under the leadership of Chief Kunkel, who became chief in 2004, we began implementing strategies. This is a drug house task force strategy and a traffic control strategy to deal with fatalities in the city. So we began implementing these strategies in 2004 upon Chief Kunkel being hired and leading the department for the next 6 years. But during that juncture, next slide, an external Dallas at the Tipping Point report and internal Berkshire report sponsored by the city was released describing the pervasive challenges facing Dallas's crime reduction efforts and describing the police department as having lost its way. So go to slide 12, please. So that's really just the headline of these two studies. Keep going. So under Chief Kunkel leadership, as I mentioned before, we implemented several different types of strategies to deal with this. Go back to that. Right, there you go. So we implemented the CompStat policing model, which began making decisions. Go back to 10, 12, right, thank you. We began making decisions based on data for the first time in our department's strategic plans. We also receive unprecedented support from the Dallas philanthropic community. We received a $15 million grant, the largest of any police department grant, from the Communities Foundation of Texas Truth Foundation. But we will stay in ninth place. Now go forward. So we will stay in ninth place in 2006 and 2007. And then it's at this point that the mayor, council, manager's office approved the hiring of 200 officers over attrition for each of the next 3 years. 06-07 budget, 07-08 budget, and 08-09 budget, which grew the department significantly, particularly the patrol parts of the department, received all of these 600 officers at one time. But just remember that the hiring cycle for a new recruit takes about 14 months from the date of hire to that officer works on the street as an independent officer. So there's a 14-month hiring gap where you actually feel the increase in staffing from those 3 years of expansion. Slide 16. So we stay at ninth, as I mentioned. And though we continue creating and layering on strategies built around data-driven decision-making, so our Fusion Center, which is our intelligence center, was created along with hotspot policing analysis, the tags. The tag areas that you hear about, this started after 2006, where we started deploying resources around the highest crime areas of the city with the most dense crime to attack our problems. And we realized at that point that 6% of our geography drove 40% of our crime. And that began us to start moving the number even more. So we moved from 9th to 8th with that one adjustment of hotspot policing, staying in the hotspots, resources on the tags, using data to drive our decision. But we remained at 7th for the next 3 years. If you go to slide 21, keep moving. And so we had remained at 7th place for three consecutive years, and we really felt stuck in 7th place, and we decided in 2010 to expand our community policing efforts, our proactive policing efforts. And we began the discussion in 2010 on how to use crime-fighting technology to enhance our capabilities. And as a reminder, we promised to bring you a briefing of a comprehensive strategy on how we use this crime-fighting technology, cameras, license plate readers, in the fall this year. Slide 23. And you can see, keep going, we stayed in 7th, keep going, right there, stay right there. You can see the array of policing strategies. These are all community policing strategies, also bending the curve using technology that we implemented from 2010 forward. And we call this strategy, all of these strategies, Community Policing 2.0. Some of you may remember that briefing back in 2010. Slide 25. So from 2010 through 2012, really the big differences are, if you look back when the hiring expansion started, these recruits are now hitting the street as independent officers. That 600 is out of the academy. It's an eighth-month academy. There's a six-month field training, and now these recruits are in the field, and we're leveraging this expansion of hiring with our data-driven decision-making. So these recruits are flooding the hotspots, and we're starting to use data to correct on crime trends that spiked during the summer, and so we have a lot of boots on the ground. And then we started using community policing, not just trying to arrest our way out of crime. We're trying to be really involved in the community, engage communities, grow Crime Watch, during the same time period for where we were at 7th for 3 years and moved to 6th. We grew Crime Watch from 700 Crime Watches to over 1,000 Crime Watches today. Next slide, please. And these next few slides, I'm not going to go through each one of them, but they really show graphically the dramatic decrease in each of the crime categories and some of the upticks as you move down. You know, there's a little bit of ebb and flow with what's happened over the last 10 years in each of the crime categories. But I do want to take you to slide 32's graph that really shows the most significance of what we're doing. Keep going. The next slide. So in 1991, we had 500 murders in Dallas. That's the highest number of murders in Dallas's history still today in 1991, and that was the headline. And so I want to take you to the graph that shows murders and what's happened. This is the murder rate, not total number of murders. But you look at the significant decline in murders from 2003 to 2012. Next slide. And really, this really takes you to the significance of the reduction. Of the 10 lowest murder years in Dallas's history on record since 1930, 2010, 2011, 2012 are amongst the 10 lowest murder years on record, with 2011 being the third lowest on record. So if you look at that, the murder rate, the most significant crime number that you see, how people feel safe around what happens in their neighborhood, around people being seriously injured and killed, these numbers are the lowest in over 50 years. Next slide. And this really, the overall crime rate and the decline since 2003, it is a dramatic decline, the most dramatic and the most consecutive, the most significant crime reduction using crime rate as the analysis since 1966. And so all the previous slides have been just statistical data. This crime-fighting effort has involved much more than statistics. It's involved a lot of sacrifice and dedication. It's involved a lot of collaboration with the community. And this kind of shows our community engagement efforts. We created a really aggressive social media strategy. Since 2012, those numbers have doubled. Our Facebook and Twitter is well above 20,000 followers. Our Crime Watch group, as I mentioned before, we continue to grow Crime Watch. That includes VIP and the neighborhood groups other than Crime Watch. Our Junior Police Academy, many of you have visited those academies at the Junior Police Academy. This is how we're going to grow the next generation of Crime Watch leadership. These are young people being trained in how to be involved in their neighborhood. Our Police Athletic Lead was dormant for over 20 years. We brought it back in 2010, and in 2012 we reached out to over 23,000 kids in this city, along with the Explorer program, which is continuing to grow. Explorer program is like a Boy Scouts to be a police officer. It's our almost AAA club. That's how we grow young police officers. These are young Dallas kids that we hope to mentor into the criminal justice profession. We've hired well over 20 or 30 of these explorers to be police officers, and so we really are excited about that program as well. Next slide. And this, as I mentioned before, since 2003 to 2012, the sacrifice is taken and dedication is taken from our officers, who deserve all the credit for any of our achievements in this area of crime reduction. I want to really note the four officers killed in the line of duty, and that over 2,000 officers seriously injured in the line of duty arresting suspects. Next slide. And I'll leave that up and take questions.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you for your leadership. We'll have some questions. Mr. Allen.
Chief started off, where'd you go to high school?
South Oak Cliff Golden Bears.
Golden Bears. Golden Bears. The DISD?
Yes, sir.
What's their football record?
Well, they're struggling so far this year, but back in the day, we dominated.
No, they're not. You're wrong. They're winning.
So DISD, South Oak Cliff, and here you stand in front of Dallas City Council, leading one of the finest police forces. So I think that speaks volumes about DISD, South Oak Cliff, and then volumes about the fact that if you just have some dreams and some imagination, you can be anything you want, right?
Yes, sir. I believe that.
I believe that, too. You also believe that mainly people, whether they're rich, in between, poor, all they really want to do is just live in a clean, safe, enriching environment. That's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
As you deal up. Let's see. Slide 39. You're right. The numbers you've shown us they've improved over the years. And four officers killed, 2,187 injured seriously.
Yes.
So it's got a price tag. It's got a price tag that comes with that. And I've said it before, and I say it to my citizens again, that I've seen over these last 6 years, men and women in blue, they're as good as they get. And I call a lot of them fence jumpers.
Yes, sir.
And because I believe that that's who you got. They'll jump fences to go get the bad guys.
Yeah, they're proud to serve.
That's right. They're after them. And that's one of the reasons you see, I think, the numbers today being what they are. You've said it pretty elegantly that you cannot arrest your way out of crime. Kind of with that being said, we're at a point now with 61% of our budget is made up of public safety.
Yes.
So I wouldn't say we've topped out, but we're getting close to topping out on the dollars that we've got. But also, I've seen over the years and that we've been able to reach out somehow to go to slide 38. And to me, this is the key of what you've been able to do and accomplish. Because you can only spend so much money. I mean, again, you're topping out at the 61%. But you've been able to, and your predecessor, been able to go out there and engage the community. Started looking in and getting them involved.
Right.
You know, you've said it before, you know, we got 1.2 million citizens. That means you got 2.4 million eyeballs that are out there. And then
That's right. The
technology they have, they can report what they're seeing. Because,
right.
Again, it goes back to just folks just wanting to live in a clean, safe environment. And you've done a really an outstanding job. And AC, I'd say, the fact with the community prosecutors, the code folks, and really the team effort that's come involved in this, I've seen new attitudes. And that attitudes have come back to the citizens, and the reality is we're not going to take it.
Right.
Large number of them.
Right.
And when you get that intel that comes from that, and we're not going to take it, we're not going to let somebody, and I've said it, say if they're living in number 202 and they've got constant traffic to that 202, mm-hmm. Well, they're up to no good. And the sooner we get them out of 202, they don't live next door to people's kids.
That's
and
right.
I think people realize that today, and it's been through y'all's educational process that where you're out there winning the hearts and the minds of the community.
Yes.
And because you understand the power of where you can leverage the community, so there is no where there becomes a culture of intolerance.
That's right.
To crime. As you go down your path in this future and how we continue to leverage this intolerance and develop this culture, you have any other pearls that you continue to pull out? We were at a conference yesterday or at a briefing yesterday where we're able to bring in some additional monies. You're going to help my neck of the woods.
Right.
What's your thoughts then on the 61% where we're at on that? Not all of it's the police department, I understand.
Right.
But also, how do you plan to continue to move the ball in the right direction with the limitations of money, but with the untold possibilities of the community? What's your future plan?
My thoughts have been, and really we began thinking about this in earnest in 2011, coming out of recession, that there wouldn't be general fund dollars available to continue to expand the way we had previously, and that we were at a point where we needed to look at efficiencies inside the department that could be leveraged against partnerships outside in the community, nonprofit community, that could do that. One thing that I think that is part of that array of strategies going forward is civilianization. Is one way to leverage efficiencies inside a department where you can have more officers out in the field and maybe have some of the desk duties done by a civilian group inside the department, which would be a great efficiency. In addition to that, I think we still want to talk with you about what technology can do to continue to drive crime down. We've created a 5-year strategic plan for the department to meet not only the council's goals for the department, but that efficiency idea along with using technology. And also, I think the community engagement aspect of what we're doing is just the tip of the iceberg. I think there's more that we can do, particularly in our hotspots, engaging these communities. I think a message to some of our highest crime areas is that you need to start snitching. The stop snitching idea, it makes you more unsafe. If you start snitching, start looking out your window more, calling the police, being more comfortable. You know, I was at National Night Out, as many of you, last night, and I was playing basketball with 10-year-olds in Dixon Circle in a uniform. And I just started thinking about what we were last summer in Dixon Circle. That was a foreign idea, but in less than 12 months, kids want to come out and engage the police department and play basketball with the chief. And I lost, by the way, to a 10-year-old.
Hey, I can relate. I can relate to that, Chief.
That was embarrassing. So, but the idea of community engagement is not lost on. That's a big chunk of crime reduction. If you can engage the youth and you get their parents, and these communities are made safer by that engagement, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, in my opinion. We can do a lot more of that. And really bend the curve in a way that we hadn't seen in Dallas in our history.
And I think I agree with you 1,000%, because that's the next wave of reduction and continued reduction.
Yes.
Again, back to that culture of intolerance to crime. And AC, one of the things that as we do this, because again, we just have to continue to think visionary. Where I'm going with this, too, over in my neck of the woods, I have a large number of multifamily workforce housing, great people, hardworking people that need a place to live. And one of the things that we've been able to do is entice the owners to do after-school programs in these, particularly if you have 350 more homes. I call them homes. If you have 350 more homes, we strongly encourage them to put in after-school programs. Last month, we kicked off start of the year one for after-school programs, and they anyway. Make a long story short, 350 homes there. A year ago, they probably had a 45% occupancy rate. Today, they're right up at the 97%, and they have a waiting list. They have a waiting list for workforce housing to get in to this community.
Right.
Where they live.
Right.
And I guarantee you, they will not tolerate somebody coming in their community selling stuff, doing things they're not supposed to do. They will notify iWatch Dallas.
That's right.
And that's what we're talking about. But then that becomes an economic incentive, just like you would if you gave an incentive to somebody to come in and do a $200 million project, you give them some kind of tax incentive. But if you give somebody an incentive to put in after-school programs for, you know, a year or whatever, because then the benefit, they see it, it's a business model, crime will go down.
Yes.
Crime's gone down in my neck of the woods very much. So, anyway, Chief, one last question. Back in the day.
Yes.
Do you ever play the Lake Highland Wildcats?
No, we didn't. I don't think we played Lake Highlands. I think the way the districts were, was that we were in that 12A back in the 70s.
Well, I guess that worked out all right.
Yes, it did.
All right.
And Mayor, you're right. The soccer's winning, but we measure success by championships, and they hadn't won one in a while.
You're right, but for the record, they're 4-0, okay?
Yeah, we'll see what happens in the playoffs. I guess I'm hard on
them. I like that. Mr. Carroll, Mr. Atkins. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Chief, you know, great to have someone from Dallas to understand Dallas and raised in the city of Dallas. It's great to have someone who do know that, and I think that's an asset to the city of Dallas, you know, so you know the neighborhood.
Thank you.
If you go to page 12, I believe, Chief,
okay.
And could you just give me a brief update, you know, on the $15 million grant, you know, what
yes.
Group did?
Right.
I know we had different officer went through that program. So
right.
How did this benefit the crime reduction?
So the first $5 million of that $15 million was spent on equipment. The in-car camera, dash cam, was the initial purchase was through that initial $5 million grant. In addition to that, patrol rifles were bought to get our officers the capacity to deal with some of these criminals who were carrying high-capacity rifles. And also, we used some of that grant money for outfitting our fusion center, the intelligence center with software and computers in order to help us drive decisions through data. The remaining $10 million was put aside, and it was used to create the Carruth Police Institute, which is our leadership training vehicle, where our sergeants, our lieutenants, our majors, and our deputy chiefs all go through leadership training that we had never been exposed to. I never had an opportunity to go because you had to usually go out of your pocket. And this created an opportunity for all of our sergeants, lieutenants to receive leadership training to create a large pool of leaders ready to serve in a succession plan as many of us move on in the coming years.
And go to page 25. And on 25, we go back to the training. We also go back to the 200 officers. And,
yes.
And you see the reduction that went down in crime, but those officers was young officers at the time.
Oh, yeah. They gave me a lot of headaches, too.
Yeah, a whole lot of headaches. So those young officers with the group grant that GAP would help train those officers in leadership
right.
to help reduce that. So that deal was an asset with that grant.
Yes. Oh, definitely. The training aspect of a young police force is critical because, you know, you're prone to make mistakes that you don't make when you're more veteran,
right.
And so training becomes a real critical aspect of their success and the department's success.
Right. And, Jerry, get to your point, Jerry. You said 61% of the public safety budget, you know, is on the our city budget, you know, that it's not, if we did not have those young officers, did not have the right money invest in the training, we would not have a reduction. So therefore, to our revenue, to our budget, we do not have to raise that up from 61-62% because we're getting better training.
Yes.
So that should be a reduction, you know, in cost to the department.
Yes.
Because of the grant.
Yes. And while you have that slide up, Mr. Ack, let me interject here. If you look at this slide, this is the 2012 comparative data. There's really three bands. You see that top tier band where you see 23, 27 for New York, Los Angeles, and then you see a band from 7th to 4th that's really within 2 or 3 points apart, and then you have the lower band from Houston down. Those from 4th to 7th place are going to be interchangeable going forward. It's going to be who figures out who leverages their strategies better than the other city. And so looking at what's happening now with Phoenix, they're falling back some more this year. Chicago's gaining some steam. Philadelphia is flat. Dallas is flat. And so as we grow our populations in these cities, our crime-fighting strategies, our economic development, what our school districts do is really going to determine who gets to leap forward into that next band over the next 3 to 5 years. And so it's incumbent upon us all to in a department to really bring our A game every year to our crime fighting strategy, and the margin of error is really small going forward.
Okay, on page 22, you know, I know that I think sometime last year, Chief, maybe first part of this year, we talking about license plate reader, tax reader. I
yes.
know that you know, we had a major discussion, a major debate about that.
Yes.
Do you know what the status are on
right.
that?
Right. We purchased our first batch of license plate readers and put them out this summer. And almost immediately, we began catching bad guys, people who were wanted for robbery, people who were wanted for murder. And we obviously are cognizant of the fact that there are legitimate privacy concerns and that this technology needs to be used in a strategic way to focus on making us safe. And we created policies to guide us in the right direction. We created an audit policy. But the early indications are the license plate reader technology is some of the most fascinating. It makes me want to be 21 again and get back out there and fight crime. It's just amazing how it looks at vehicle license plate and takes you to the person driving in our city wanted for a major serious crime, and almost instantly where the officer used to have to from memory memorize license plates, and now this technology helps us do our job exponentially better, more efficient than we could ever do with just our human capabilities.
And by saying that, Chief, is great, because I know there was an incident in my district. And the cameras were at the store, and they found the person within hours driving
yes.
down the freeway just by reading those license plates. So
yes.
it do work. AC, when we talk about the license plates readers and the policies, are we going to come back to the council, and when we're going to come back to the council? Because I know there's been an ongoing debate, you know, policymakers, how we do this. But
right.
I think in my district, you know, especially I would love, you know, in my residence, especially in the high point, hot spot over there at Charleston and Camp Wilson, if something happened, if someone drive off down the street, hey, if the car was blue, green, tag
right.
numbers right here, you can look at that in real time,
yes.
and you can catch the person who did the crime. But if we don't visit it on the policy, we're getting way behind. I think crime can go down, but I think we need to have a great debate. They see, I know we've been talking about this for I don't know how long, but when are they going to come back?
I think our commitment was that after a year of working through the program that we would be coming back to public safety with a review of the policy. I believe it's at 6 months that
yes.
the data is being kept. We wanted to see after that time whether or not there needed to be any more time or whether or not it's working fine.
Well, and I agree. You said a year, and sometimes speed up time, sometimes time might be 6 months, a year might be too long, but I just would love to see the data, what's going on, how it's working. It could be just a small briefing to say, here's the numbers and we input this, and halfway through that 1 year, because
okay.
we do have new council members here who was not part of that policy maker, what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish, so I just
okay.
wish we bring it up, you know, much sooner. Page 16. And this right here is one Mr. Carraway always said, the cameras, the technology, you know. And I am a firm believer in the cameras, Mr. Carraway. I know right there on my hot spot, that right there on Camp Wilson and Charles for many, many years. It took me many, many years
yes.
just to get a camera there.
Right.
And since we have a camera there, we have numerous arrests
yes.
at that location.
It's working really well.
And believe me, those cameras do work, but the key is, how do you put those cameras in the right location, in the right spot? There are a whole lot of more grants out there to be written, and I know that my district, we was doing a grant, and we did a great grant, but we did not qualify for the money because the hot spot, we was number
right.
10, number 11. It went to another part of the city. But the technology is there. We need to make sure we do have the cameras. And I think that, Mr. Carraway, that how many hot spots do we have in the city now?
27.
You got 27 hot spots.
Yes.
So when you do the hot spot, Chief, do you I know you do, but you rank all the hotspots.
You rank them from 1 to 27.
1 to
based
27.
On highest crime to least highest crime.
Right. So on a 27 hotspot, do they have they changed in the last 3 or 4 years? You know, one was
very little.
Very little.
Very
change.
Little change in the in
and
the
that's what I'm getting at. If we got very, very little change in the hotspot, we need to try to figure this out with more cameras or whatever we need to do because it's not changing, they say. So 27 hotspot, still the same ranking. So that means we're doing a good job or we're not doing a good job or we need to change the technique of how we do that. I know in my district, I do have one major problem, Jerry, like you're talking about the apartments. I got 5 different owners within a city block. And they don't communicate that great. Sometimes they communicate, sometimes they don't communicate. And when they don't communicate, crime go up. And so I know your deal over there in Lake Hallows, you try to put people together and put the owners together, but sometimes it just don't work. Then we just had to do something different. So I don't know what we need to do, Chief. You have any suggestion?
Well, you're right on point. This is the issue going forward for crime reduction in Dallas. How do we do a better job in the hotspots? If you look at what it takes to get from 6th to 1st, we're 40% behind. You look at what happens in the hotspots, they're 6% of the geography, they're 40% of the crime. So that 40% number is the key to going forward being safer in Dallas, and not just safer in Dallas. The safest city in the country is front and center in these hotspots. So what we do with community engagement, what we do with technology, what we do with efficiencies and through civilianization, all hinge upon what resources we can put proactively in the hotspots to do a much better job at reducing crime. That 40% is there for the taking if we can figure it out.
And one thing I'll say again, Chief, thank you, but I still believe the policy to read those license plates, if we got cameras in those 27 hotspots and read those license plates on the crime committee, it is a great percentage that we might catch those people who did the crime.
We don't have enough right now, but that's you're exactly right.
So that's what I think. And so I think that instead of waiting a year, AC, you should come out 6 months and just look at it. I know it's a difference in the hot spot in my area with those cameras and read those license plates. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Atkins, for talking about those cameras and those hot spots. First, let me get started and say that I got to clear up a little something here. And what I got to clear up is in reference to the South Oak Cliff stuff. You're the chief, and you graduated from South Oak Cliff. South Oak Cliff and Roosevelt.
Roosevelt Mustang.
That's right. And I want to make it very clear that I graduated from Roosevelt. But we're both from Oak Cliff is where I'm going with this. And then I also want to make it clear that our fire chief, Louis Bright, he graduated from
Roosevelt High.
Thank you very much. I just want to make sure I want to make sure we understand Roosevelt is 2-1 here. But then I do want to give a little kudos to our mayor pro tem because you're from Oak Cliff. You graduated from Bishop Dunn. Am I correct? So that's Oak Cliff. So Oak Cliff is 4-0 right now with that Wildcat. How about that Wildcat? All right. I know we got some Hillcrest and Woodrow Wilson and all that, but we're going to leave that alone. Let me say one thing, Chief. I appreciate that, Tanel, you mentioned about the hot spots. We talked about cameras, and we are going to have some additional cameras, and I'm sure that the cameras will be in all 27 hot spots, and some of those hot spots will need more than just one camera.
Yes.
So that we can help bring the reduction of this crime down. So I know that that's coming, and I applaud that. You mentioned about and I like to name those cameras.
Okay.
I like for us to come up creatively with a name.
Okay.
You know, I watch my neighborhood, and some type of a catch name like Don't Mess with Texas. So when those cameras go, people will be on the lookout. So from a marketing perspective, we need to kind of attach a brand to them, AC, so that, that would be that, and we could identify that program. With that, too, I like to for the Dallas Police, because you mentioned the teens, and you know I'm
fascinated when it comes to the teenagers and,
right.
and the youth.
Right.
I would like, we had 300 kids here on Saturday in City Council for our teen summit, and it was dealing with mathematics. But I would like for the Dallas Police and our teen summits to do a Dallas Police teen summit where we would come here, and then maybe, okay. Mayor, we could engage in just that particular Saturday where we have the teenagers in here and we'll address different crime things. And,
okay.
and who knows, we may come out with some recruits,
yes.
that may be interested in leading
right.
them in the right direction. So
okay.
You all have a more budget than my foundation, so I'd like teaming with the police and
okay.
we'll do a teen summit here.
We'll do.
And we'll get that
together.
So let's put that on the plan. One other thing I want to ask you is this. What effect does the government shutdown that we're currently in the middle of, what effect is it having on any of our programs and our initiatives here at the Dallas Police Department?
I think it's too early to tell. Going forward, I guess some of our grants, our federal grants are associated with, there's a couple of Justice Department grants, and some of the reimbursements could be slower based on how long the shutdown goes, and so it's yet to be determined at this point, depending on how long it goes. So I know we had some reimbursements, and it's late in the year, but we still have some outstanding that could affect some of our policies and some of our operations.
So there is an effect that we cannot measure right now today,
right.
but we need to be on point as we talk about grants and other programs and things that we're depending on. We're involved with that. And
yes.
we need to make sure that we understand the fact that that's a possibility, that
right.
some of our things and programs and wishes could be at risk due to this government shutdown at this time.
Our reimbursements could be delayed, which could then affect the operations and policies that we employ using federal grants. Yes, you're
and
correct.
And so we're closely monitoring
yes,
that
we are.
To make sure that we don't get caught in a,
yes,
in
we
a hole. Okay, that's kind of what I wanted to say. You know, I know we're on top of things. You've been on top of it. I'm glad to see that you even gave Chief Kunkel his credit for.
He dug us out of a deep hole. He deserves a lot of credit.
Out of that hole and beginning to move us forward. And then I'm more excited the fact that you carried that ball to get us to the next point. And then I encourage us to continue counsel with technology. Because the more technology and the more that we put the focus on that technology is like putting a new officer, another eye on the ground, and that's so very important. So thank you, Chief, and keep me posted on that government shutdown and
I
the
will.
Effect that it's having on our
will.
Department. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mayor. Chief, my colleagues have made so many good points, it's going to shorten my presentation, which I think everybody will be pleased with. First, I do really want to thank you for the work you're doing. When I got to this city in 1999, I mean, the comparison between that department and the department today is unbelievable. You know, to be the department of fake drugs back then and to come as far as we've come now is truly amazing, and you and Chief Kunkel really deserve a lot of credit for that. Councilman Allen made a point in a really diplomatic way that I think you're well aware of, but your budget is high.
Yeah.
It needs to be high. I think the council will always give you what you need to keep us safe. But what I think the point he was making was you're going to need to demonstrate to us with reliable data why you need future budget increases or changes, and we'll give them to you every time as long as we get good data.
Okay.
I want to also mention that Councilman Carraway raised a great point. The federal shutdown does affect local policing because there's so much federal money sloshing around in local police, and some of it has been focused on excellent initiatives and other is, frankly, pork. And I know that you know the difference, but make sure that we know the difference when you come asking us to approve acceptance of a federal grant.
I will.
I really wanted to congratulate you on your job is to keep us safe. And if people are getting hurt, if crimes are being committed, people lose focus real quick on their civil liberties. But you don't. And I want to encourage you to continue to do that going forward. I'll be very interested to see the briefing you requested, MPT Atkins. That's just, I think that's critical in terms of those license plate readers and how we're managing that data. That's a terrific idea. I'll be looking very forward to that. The last thing I wanted to say, Chief, is that your department has made terrific strides in what I would call preventable crime, where you're looking at a problem systemically and shutting down fencing operations, for instance. I think we've made really good strides on that. There are a bunch of other examples that we could give, but there are repeated problems, sometimes all in the same area of town, sometimes they pop up in different areas of town, but there are repeated problems that have to do with policies of other governmental entities, not necessarily City of Dallas, that burden your department sending out the same officers on the same calls over and over again year after year and making no headway.
Right.
When you identify a policy problem that is preventing you from keeping us safe, bring that to this council. It can, if it's not something that we can affect as policymakers, it's something that we can lobby for through our, you know, through Judge Hill's legislative ad hoc. I mean, we can try to have an effect on this. We don't want to leave you in the situation of doing the same thing over and over again, because frankly, your officers are better than that, and we don't need to be wasting their time that way.
Right.
Anyway, thanks a lot for this briefing. It was great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. I have a couple of questions, Chief. With the Crime Watch group, I know that some of the Crime Watch groups are more sophisticated than others.
Yes.
Do we have anything in place to work with those Crime Watch groups, the ones who are kind of almost there but still need some help? Do we still have anything to work with them on?
We do, and we need to do a better job. One of the things that I really want to encourage Crime Watch groups to meet regularly. There are some groups that meet once a year, twice a year, or once a quarter. That's not often enough to meet. You need to meet a minimum of once a month, mm-hmm. if you're a Crime Watch group. Many Crime Watch groups cover the same area. As much as possible, if you're covering the same area, it would be better to have one Crime Watch group for a specific area. And we just need to do a better job of explaining some of the best strategies for Crime Watch groups to understand that, you know, hearing the statistical data information about what's happening in your neighborhood is critical for their awareness and their prevention of crime and helping us look out for things. And so if many of you have those two scenarios where they don't meet regular enough, often enough, and you have those scenarios where you might have three groups representing the same area.
Is there anything that we can do, like a webinar, for those neighborhood groups? Because some of them might can just do a webinar in their meetings where it keeps them educated on different perspective when it comes to crime. As we move forward with technology, I think we need to get into the webinar.
Right. And training, that's a great point. Training some of our Crime Watch chairs on how to use technology as well, because I can tell you the Crime Watch groups that have the email blasts, that have really good organization around notifying people of before the meeting or doing gaps in when they meet, or the better Crime Watch. You're keeping people aware, and using
Absolutely.
Technology sometimes is the challenge, because many of them are not as adept to using technology as others. So we may need to just start training people on how to use it, and then take the step to your webinar and take the step to email distribution list and email blast and Twitter and Facebook for each of the Crime Watch groups, where they can all just look at a glance at what's happening.
In all our Crime Watch, everybody have phones.
Yes.
Everybody.
Yes.
Everybody have phone. Even if we somehow attach the webinar to the phone, so they might not be computer savvy, but they are phone savvy, when they can use webinar towards their phone. So even if we can come up with something like that, I went to a couple of my Crime Watch National Night Out last night, and Mr. Bass with Rose Garden, and they had a nice turnout. But it would have been nice if they could have had some information where they could have just
went into to just continue to talk about those things that you guys are looking for them to improve on. So I think as we go forward with Crime Watch Group, I think your communication department needs to look at things like webinar, look at the phone and how we educate them, look at, you know, those group like Anna Hill, who's extremely savvy on the computer, and having some type of education component. If it's once a month, bringing those neighborhood leaders down and just continue to educate them on things that have changed here in the last year.
Great. That's we'll bring a briefing to you on that helps us explain how we want to do that and when we start that project. That's a great idea.
Okay. The now, the other thing, you have your chief on the beat. I really think you, and I've said this to you a number of times, have a kid chief on the beat. Strictly for kids and to get them involved with your chief on the beat. Now, I think the other thing, Chief Brown, that we need to continue to look at, we got to still deal with our drug activities, especially in inner city communities. And I guess all over, just not inner city communities anymore, but really, how do we handle that? How do we really get into dealing with, and these are street drugs.
Yes.
And so have you thought about that and things?
Right. This strategy is going to be something that will be the challenge. We don't have enough resources right now to deal with the volume of drug complaints that come to verify whether it's legitimate or it's bogus. You have to check every house. We spun up a task force of about 50 officers to start this journey and trying to figure out how we bring in the capacity to do this. I can tell you right now, our narcotics division hadn't increased its staffing in my whole career, 30 years. It's been about 100 people doing narcotics work, and that's going to be the challenge for my decision-making going forward. We need to double that over the next few years and find a way to find efficiency to do it and not come back to you asking you for more resources to do it. We need to find a way to do less in other units to be able to do more in narcotics through civilianization and other types of strategies that could really help us deal with the volume of drug complaints in this city.
You know, those shows that come on TV, and I'm just kind of going sideways, the cop shows, and they show Dallas all the time. Do we get paid for that? Is just one of those?
We use it as PR. What we do get from some of those shows is some in-kind services, advertising.
Okay.
We like that our name is there for recruiting. It's a recruiting tool.
Okay.
And they sometimes give us some literature, some of their photography, some of their media to cut a commercial in the show about recruiting, being a Dallas police officer. So, yeah, it's a benefit to us to have our name in a positive way in TV and media.
Okay. The other one, and I have two more and I'll be finished, Mr. Mayor. On the do you have a police plan? Do you have a police strategy plan? Do y'all write up a police strategy plan?
Yes, we have had 1-year strategic plans in the past. Two other times we've had multi-year strategic plans. We just recently completed a 5-year strategic plan that we want to bring to you in short order, the fall or maybe early next year, January, to just kind of lay it out to you. We had the help of a consultant with this plan, and we're using SMU to help us communicate this plan throughout the organization and out in the public. And so we want to bring that to you in January.
Then do you take your officers and have strategic planning with them as we do on the city council?
Yes.
And I know you're talking about your 5-year strategic plan. What I will hope that's in that plan, inner city communities. How do we get them more engaged with what we're trying to do?
Yeah, just to give you a preview, we have 5 pillars to the plan. Community engagement, what you're talking about, is a major component of our 5-year strategic plan. Yes.
Okay. Now, on the Safer Dallas that you talked about, you had sent an email out, or someone did, from your office where we could have gone to the, I guess, the press conference or the meeting to talk about identifying the money. You selected 2 of the neighborhoods. What was the intent of selecting those 2 neighborhoods first?
Donors in those areas submitted money, $350,000 for those specific tags.
Okay.
And so that was the selection process. We just try to guide the donors into some of our highest areas, but many donors want to give money for a specific area. An example would be the downtown. People wanted to give two downtown cameras, so that's specific. There are some donors, though, that just want to give us the funding, and we decide, but many donors give funding for specific areas.
Right. And so, and Chief Brown, somehow we just need to figure out a way, because I know that there are donors in my area, Ms. Caraway's area, I guess in Tanea area, who would step up to the table.
Okay.
For example, I'm going to use Mr. Atkins. Is it a particular doctor's office or a particular school, I don't know, who might step up to the table and say, we would like to give $100,000 to promote Mr. Atkins' area.
Okay.
And I agree with you. If those donors are giving $400,000 and $500,000, they want to see those cameras in a particular area that's going to make them feel safe.
Right.
It doesn't, and that's just my own personal opinion, it doesn't make any sense if you're going to give $600,000 and you take the cameras over into my area. I have no problem with that.
Right.
I understand that. I just know when people are giving a huge amount of money towards cameras, most of them would like to see it in an area where they live, where they work, of some sort of the school their kids go to.
Right.
So somehow I wish that we could find some individuals in my district, Ms. Caraway's district,
okay,
and other of the southern district who would step up to the table and say, look, we would like to partner with the city of Dallas in order to make our neighborhood feel safe. But I guess in those southern half of our city where we live, I guess it would have to be the Walmarts of the world, the CVS of the world, whoever
Target,
of the world.
Target, Walgreens.
Walgreens.
There's a lot of people we could pull in to see what their interest might be in helping us.
Can we work on that to see if that can happen?
Ms. Davis, we can make this happen. I mean, there's money out there that wants to focus on southern Dallas and crime. I mean, there's no question. And we just need to put a plan together in the right way, some of the things you and I are working on, and we'll get that done.
Right. Because, and Mr. Mayor, I'll be finished, because I read over it, and I just don't think, you know, that when it's just my fundraising hat, I've been a resource developer for many years, I just don't see people giving that type of money. And then, and I'm just not, and it's just my own personal opinion. So, okay, I'm going to give $2 million, and I live in a certain area. They want to see those cameras
there
in the area which they gave the money to.
Right.
And it's no disrespect to them. They just feel safer.
Right.
That knowing that they got cameras, they're not going to take a $2 million grant and say, okay, I'm going to put it in Ms. Davis' area. And I'm not upset with that. We just got to somehow roll up our sleeves
and
find the money for people who live and work in our district, in our neighborhood, so that they can give us cameras. And so I just wanted to throw that out there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Judge Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Chief, thank you for the presentation and for the work that you and the men and women in blue do so very, very well for our city. I want to say publicly to the families of the four who have gone on how appreciative we are for the sacrifice that their loved ones made for the safety of me, my family, and the other families in this city.
Thank you so much for that.
Chief, I was out at National Night Out last night. I had about 12 different National Night Out gatherings. I asked for your department to have officers at every one. You did. You didn't have just one officer.
Good.
You had lots of officers at every one of mine. I was able to get to, I think, 8 or 9 about 10 o'clock last night. I lost count. Somebody said, how many have you been to? I said, I don't know. I can't remember. I've lost count. But one of them that I was at, Cedar Vista Crime Watch, made the point that you're making about the significance of Crime Watch groups. The Crime Watch leader said to me, our crime has gone down 100% since we started the Crime Watch group in 2011. Chief, I want to have more Crime Watch groups in my district. Can you tell the public how they can start a Crime Watch group if they don't have one? Who do they call?
They can call the police department, and I'm going to just say a number real slowly so everybody can write down who's listening. You can call my office, 214-671-3901, 214-671-3901, and we'll get them attached to our community affairs unit, formerly run by Levi Williams, now run by Sean Williams, no relation. And we will get them organized around Crime Watch. It is the single most effective way to make your neighborhood safe. It's being organized around Crime Watch and then partnering with the police department.
Those of you who are listening, I hope that you took down the number. And in my letter that I sent out concerning National Night Out, I said to people, if you do not have a Crime Watch group, please start one. And I said it for the very reason that you said. Also, Chief, you gave tremendous kudos to former Chief Kunkel. He deserves all of that praise. But word on the street is that while Chief Kunkel was here, there was some guy who was his executive assistant who helped him significantly with that. And I seem to recall that word on the street says that that some guy was some guy named David Brown. Do you know that guy?
Yeah, and I could tell you, he called me into his office in 04, and I looked at this data, and I thought, you got to be kidding me. We're going to do what in the next few years? And it has been quite a challenge for these officers to be. I mean, we rode them hard and put them up wet. I can tell you, we drive these officers to achieve more and more every year. We're very demanding. We hold them accountable. But you're right, I was second in command for the 6 years under Chief Kunkel's leadership, and it has been quite a journey to just get to this point. We're not where we want to be, but quite a journey.
As I said, I heard that word on the street was that whoever that second-in-command guy was rode them hard. I heard that that guy got to be chief, and the word on the street I'm talking about is the police officers. As you know from my 17 years at the municipal court,
yes, ma'am.
I know the officers, and so that word on the street is that that guy really rode them hard. I'm very proud of that guy for doing that and bringing our crime stats down to where they are.
Thank you so much.
Chief, you have had some wonderful initiatives. Your chief on the beat is excellent. That's been mentioned by another council member. I visited one of the chief on the beats, as you know, over at Kimball.
Yes.
Excellent idea, excellent to engage. Likewise, I'm fine with the fact that you got beat by the 10-year-old because, as you know, Chief, about 60% of my law practice, my private business, is criminal defense. And many, many, too many of the people that I see in my business are young men who have been without male
yes.
role models.
Yes.
The story is consistent. When I visit them down at Lustard, I say, where's your dad? My dad wasn't in the picture. And so, Chief, keep losing to 10-year-olds
yes,
so that they can see a male role model. And in general, I want to say to everyone, encourage dads to stay. No matter how tough it gets, dads, I encourage you to stay. Chief, I also want to thank you for the VIP program. That was another thing that I heard last night about how effective that is,
yes.
And your Explorers program. One of the boys in my Boy Scout troop is in your Explorers program, and I've seen that boy's head go up and his back get straighter
yes.
because of the Explorers program. Thank you for all that you do. Finally, council members, I want to say the chief touched on the fact that we have federal grants and the shutdown will delay possibly some execution of our grants and may delay our activities. I do encourage us as council members, as the best lobbyists that the city has as elected officials, that we continue to say thank you to our federal partners, our federal legislators, our Congress members, how much we appreciate the money that comes to Dallas. The police department lobbies for their own money. We lobby for other money. They lobby for their own money. But we as council members do get a chance to say to the congressional members, thank you for what you do for law enforcement. I went over to Justice at one point specifically to say thank you. They were happy that I wasn't there begging,
right,
because they see, when they see me, they know I'm coming begging. But I went over to say thank you, and I encourage other council members and the mayor to do the same thing, to keep bringing as many federal dollars as possible to Dallas to help with this very excellent, excellent crime-fighting work that you're doing. Again, thank you, Chief, to you and the men and women in blue of the city of Dallas. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Chief, for this presentation. Got three areas where I got questions on. First one on page 39. On the total arrests, about how many individuals is that? I was just surprised.
We arrest upwards of 60,000 people every year. Our Dallas officers arrest upwards of 60,000. The peak was like 72,000 back in 2010. We're tracking this year to be around 65,000 people arrested.
So 65,000 are arrested each year. Wow.
Yes.
About how many of those are frequent flyers or whatever term you want to use?
Yeah. Frequent flyer is a good term. The habitual criminal is a thorn in our flesh. I can promise you that is the one of the issues, is that people that we arrest repeatedly are the people that continue every moment they're out of jail, they're committing a crime, and that is a high number. That number at some points in many of these years gets upwards of several thousand people are habitual criminals. Every moment they're out of jail, they're committing a crime.
So I saw this on page 39 showing the about a decade, 2003 through 2012, and that number of total arrests is just over half the population of the city of Dallas arrested over a decade. So I was just wondering what
some of the
numbers
same
were.
Folks same,
I hope we have some this,
yes.
And that we have some methods for dealing with that. My second question would be just some clarification on a point my colleague Tanel Atkins raised. I think it was on the video for the license plates. Did I hear it was 6 months that was being retained? Or
three months.
3 months. That
yeah,
was
when we debated between 6 and 3,
and we're at
settled
three right
on
now.
Three in committee, three months is the retention schedule for the license plate reader data.
And AC, this is a point I have that's, I've been asking about how we're maintaining our data on our own boards and commissions. And so it's my understanding on some of our boards and commissions, we're only keeping the information such as the video or audio for some boards and commissions 3 months. So I know we're keeping license plate data, which is the city keeping data, some of it on obviously innocent individuals for 3 months. But then on ourselves, which is important government business, the way we act, is we also only keep that data for 3 months. So I think in this era of big data as a policy matter, and I'm not debating whether or not 3 months is right for the to keep this data from the license plate readers, but we should be keeping a lot more data on ourselves and making it available. I know we've talked a little bit about that offline, about some of the short period of times for our boards and commissions that we keep that information for a minimal amount of time. And data on innocent individuals, the city watching people, we're keeping it for the same amount of time or longer. So I think moving forward in this time of big data, we'll need to address that and at least have the same standard or greater threshold and standard of transparency and accountability on ourselves than what we do on potentially innocent individuals.
In the next briefing, we're mentioning a little bit of that, and we'll come back to maybe the Audit and Finance Committee and just a presentation about just some of those standards that we have in terms of keeping of data or some committee to see about reviewing that.
Yeah, and this isn't the first time I've brought it up, or it won't be the last, so I'd like us to continue to have that discussion, and I'll be interested in whichever committee it it goes to. So thank you, AC. Third, Chief Brown, I look at this whole plan and kind of identified from it probably five reasons that crime has gone down so much. And I'd say number one is good police work, number two is good police work, and number three is good police work. That needs to be up at the center. And number four, I know we're also in some, people have said, some national trend where for whatever reason in this past decade or so, crime has gone down. And the fifth reason, which I'd like you to comment on just to clarify it, is we have changed the manner in which we calculate crime over the past few years. And so, one, I would like to know if today, if we have some uniformity, particularly in these top 10 or whatever our peer group is considered, that we're all calculating it the same way or near the same way, number one. So then I think the rankings, I know the FBI disclaimer and yes. all of that, how we yes. get things reported in, so that there's a level playing field, because that would give the stats additional meaning. Right. Then number two, just your comments on, I know we changed, one reason that we changed the way we calculated crimes and reported them to the FBI and these national clearinghouses was that we believed we were over-reporting crime. And I think the classic example I remember that was there would be, for example, three cars on a block all in a row, and all three get their windows knocked out about the same time period. It's probably the same individual, and before we may have reported that as three crimes, but it's kind of one individual right. just hitting three sure. cars. Mm-hmm. And so I would like your comments over the last decade. What part of the crime reduction is just due to the manner in which we've changed statistics? Because as I start off leading off, the top three reasons it's gone down is good police work, right. and good police work related to our efforts on narcotics, traffic, keeping three officers per 1,000, and the CompStat approach.
Right. This is a common critique of statistical analysis around crime data of all the major cities. New York gets this criticism, as does Dallas, Chicago, particularly around, I think, the better answer to the critics are police officers are trying to find efficiencies. And so if you look at our shoplift policies, we're trying to create an efficiency of about $1 million and several hours of police officers' time to go after fence operations. And so you take the critique that, well, you're discouraging people from reporting the crime, and our efforts are to get at the root causes of that particular crime and create more consequences for criminals. When you had a 4% conviction rate, doing the things the same way you've always done them. In addition to that, just the statistical changes that we made in 07, how we report crime, and the shoplift policies, those differences are just very small fringes of our total 45% crime reduction. So if the critics are 100% right in their analysis, the shoplift policy change was about 3% or less of the 10% reduction we had that year. Over the 45% reduction we had over the 10 years, you know, then you had a 42% reduction if they're 100% right. If they're 100% right, the changes in 07 were, I think I calculated the point in 07, having the answer to the critics at that point as second in command, was maybe you got a 0.25% advantage on the aggravated assault category, which is a 0.5% of total crime. And so this is a fringe conversation that every major city deals with from particular reporters or particular media that really gravitates toward this hypercriticism. And we accept it, and it's part of being in charge, taking that type of criticism. But it's along the fringes. I like your top three. It's great police work, great police work, and sacrifice. I like this slide, and sacrifice. Is you don't arrest 600,000 people or more and get a fringe benefit from a small change that may or may not help you at 3% or 0.25%. So we push forward through that, and we know we have a bigger challenge. I like to point people toward the murder rate number. It's the lowest murder rate since 1958. And we're not hiding any bodies. where the ME counts every and looks at every homicide in this city and declares it's a homicide, and we work our tails off to catch these people who would do that kind of crime. And that's the most significant decrease, the homicide rate, in Dallas's history, to go from 500 homicide rate in 1991 to, we've averaged since 2010 less than 200 homicides a year, and we call a spike 154. Well, we've had under 200 very few times in our, you know, 80-year history of keeping crime records. And again, you know, you're going to always have criticisms, and sometimes the critics are right. I just think in this aspect, it's a fringe number, but every major city on that 10 chart, top 10 chart, receives the same criticism. Last year, Chicago stopped answering their lower priority calls to create more efficiency to deal with their shootings in the city. And so you trade off sometimes efficiencies for reactive work in order to gain more safety for your citizens. And so you could take it at either way. It depends on your perspective. Is that you're cooking the books or you're being more efficient and making the city safer is how we like to look at it.
Thank you, Chief. And then would you say now there's pretty much uniformity in how these top cities are all now reporting crimes? Are we getting there? Are there still
some challenges there? I keep going back to Chicago. They don't report their sexual assaults at all. And so they disagree with how UCR, how the uniform crime reporting practices are meted out. And so they don't report. They report zero sexual assaults in their cities. And yet we're still compared with Chicago. We surpassed them, but again, and every city has that little small nuanced challenge to how they report, and they just disagree. They get audited by the FBI like we do, and they move forward. So it is not uniformed.
So that uniform crime reporting is not uniform?
No, it's not. But it's the best comparison we have. That's why we started being compared that way. None of the cities like these comparisons. They would prefer that we look at kind of internally Dallas in history or Dallas in time, how we compare to last year or the last 3 years or the last 10 years as a barometer rather than us trying to level the playing field amongst cities in the Northeast, on the West Coast, and in the Midwest, because they're all different jurisdictions. The Northeast cities have better mass transit. Fewer people have cars. More people drive cars in Dallas, so you're likely to have more types of crime in municipalities that drive more cars than ride the subway. And so there's so many nuances to the demographics of all these big cities that I don't know how you would ever get a level playing field. This is just the best comparison that we have to explain to the public, and that's why we just accept it and we try to explain things in that format.
Well, I agree with your approach, Chief, that it's best to use both comparisons, our internal one, looking at comparing it our performance to years past, and then also comparing ourselves to our peer group, other large cities with over 1 million in population. So thank you for your answers, and thank you for all the good work you do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Thank you, Mayor. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you, Mayor, and also thank you, Chief Brown. I applaud and congratulate the force for, you know, the improvements and the progress that the department is making, and it's evident that we made the right choice when we selected you.
Oh, thank you.
And I personally thank you for that. We are moving towards a safer city, and certainly the reduction in violent crime is evident, and that this is very encouraging for our citizens, in particular the people in District 5. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the property crimes, though, in our area continue to be an aggravation there in District 5 and particularly Southeast Dallas. Particularly of note would be burglaries, robberies, and assaults continue to fester, and those are kind of on the increase here over the last couple of months. There's also a continuation, as you mentioned earlier, with known drug houses and also storefronts. That's, I think, statistics, you know, are probably somewhere I've heard from some of your department employees, probably in the range of around 40, you know, in the Southeast Dallas area. So I'm very concerned about that. Right. And while I do appreciate the hiring that we've made, the 20 officers over attrition, I just want to go on record and continue to state that our sector, Southeast Patrol Division, is still about 60 officers short. And that's my responsibility to try to make improvements there. And I know we've tried to hire more people and we're coming through the academy as fast as we can and certainly understand those limitations, but I just want to continue because that is such a large geographical area, not just District 5, but Southeast Dallas is a very large geographical area, perhaps the largest patrol division in the city, and we need the officers for that coverage. So I'd like to continue to make improvements in that area.
Okay.
Also, as you pointed out, the shortage of narcotics officers, that's perhaps why we have still probably 40 drug houses and storefronts, because you guys just can't cover the bases. And I know you're trying hard with the intel that you have to do that, and we are, I know, striking back as we speak, and I really appreciate that. One thing, to be fair and honest about the reporting numbers our new policy of shoplifting, and I think Councilman Griggs may have mentioned that. I was in the restroom, came back. But that continues to be a particularly a problem, particularly stores, Levine's that we've talked about,
right,
and other merchants there have indicated that's a problem in this, the pettiness. And it sounds petty, $50, but that's $50. And when this occurs over and over and over again, that's particularly problematic for them, the small business owners. We've also had some incidences recently with insurance, robberies,
mm-hmm. Yes.
And a lot of these, unfortunately, small and even minority insurance owners, they keep a lot of cash, and we've got to find a better way educational-wise. Perhaps I can help, you can help, mm-hmm. To try to send the word if we can use debit cards, credit cards, checks, direct deposit or take that straight out of the bank, that might be much safer, because these guys they know they've got money and they just come in at the worst possible time, at the end of the day when they're about ready to go to the bank. So I hope we can continue to make inroads there. I do agree with the strategies that are taking place. Our growing crime watches is going to make, and it has made a bigger difference. Cameras, I understand even as we speak, we're getting more and more cameras,
yes,
in Southeast, and that's outstanding. I hope we're not taken away from Councilman Carraway's district.
No, we wouldn't dare do that.
I'd feel bad about that, but I say we are getting our own, and I'd say that's good. And also this hot spot patrolling, I know we've used the metro force,
yes,
that you've used, that you're moving people around to these hot spots. I think that's real encouraging. I think that we're reaping the benefits of that. But in the final analysis, I would just like to say and go on record, I would like to see more officers on the streets.
Okay.
I know we have a lot in administrative roles,
yes,
and NPO roles and so forth. Just create a stronger presence, I think, would be very beneficial,
yes,
for our area. And, again, I thank you for what you're doing. I know we still have more work to do. You understand that. And,
yes.
And thanks for the good work that you're doing, and let's just continue to drive, particularly those robberies and the burglaries and those types of things.
And we'll visit with Levine's. We visited with them pretty regularly about their concerns, and we'll revisit with them again on that policy and how we can improve our responsiveness to them.
All right. Thank you,
we'll
Chief. I appreciate it. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll be brief. Chief, thank you for an excellent report.
You're welcome.
And I know you're going to continue to lower that. The programs you have coming up, hopefully I'll be able to work with you in that, in public safety.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to that.
We'll bring it to you. Yes, sir.
So you're going to have some great new programs that we can,
yes,
get implemented. Your public programs, Chief, I hope you continue to try to build on those, because the more we can get our constituents to work with you and help you, I promise you, the better our neighborhoods are going to be.
Right.
The quality of life in our neighborhoods, every one of us here, I know it's public safety is number one.
Right.
And if we don't have that, quality of life isn't that great.
That's right.
What I'd like to get is, if we can, a list of the hot spots.
Yes, we will. Good.
And to each of us, and maybe in our districts, we can work with our constituents in those spots to just keep them cleaned up.
Right.
And keep the trash, the litter off the streets. I mean, it really helps an area to drive into it and see a good, clean area instead of seeing an area that's looks like you see trash all over and this type of thing. What do you think is going to happen in the area?
Right.
If you look good, you're going to be good. So please get us that list.
We got my staff writing notes down on what we need to
okay,
provide
you great.
Guys. Yes.
And for our crime watches, I'm glad you gave this number that we can have. I'm going to put it on my website that anybody that wants to set one up can call.
Yes.
I think we have close to, in my district, we've got quite a few. We've got some good crime watches.
Yeah, your district, there. And if you can move to Mr. Kleinman's, Ms. Grayson's, and Ms. Gates, far in, they are some of the best organized. They have great ways of communicating.
Mm-hmm.
We've co-opted some of those strategies in Ms. Alonzo's districts,
that's
Mr. Griggs' districts, and we're pushing those to Mr. Carraway and Carolyn Davis's, Ms. Carolyn Davis's district. And I just think there's a template, there's a model for how you can be effective in crime watch that everyone in the city can benefit from.
Mm-hmm. And our districts, the ones we're doing it in, if we can help in some way with the other districts to work with them to try to get crime watches set up, because I'll tell you, it really helps. And lastly, I'd like to try to see more officers through the neighborhoods.
Okay.
Just drive through.
Yes.
Going back to the station. Hit the neighborhoods going to go back. Don't take the main road.
Right.
Because
right.
the visibility of them being there is really... really a big time. It works. And the last thing I got to tell you, the innovation and the tech things that you're doing are unreal. They're going to help us with crime big time. That's going to help pull that 40% down.
Yes.
I guarantee
yes.
you. Because I saw your vehicle, the license plate recorder.
It's amazing.
It is unreal, guys. If you haven't seen this, it's got three cameras on it. This car can be going 50 miles an hour, and that thing, it gets a bad car, a bad license plate, beep, they've got it.
Yes.
One beep's all they need, and it flashes up. They can even get cars that are parked parallel,
yes.
passing them by. So I think this is one of the neatest inventions we've got today.
Yes.
And I think it's going to help you big time. So thank you, Chief, for all you're doing. And thank your officers out there on the street.
I will.
We've got to do the right thing for them because they are fantastic. They do a great job.
They do.
You got the best force in the country.
All the credit goes to them.
Yeah.
I'm
thank
very
you,
fortunate.
Chief.
Yes.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Alonzo.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Chief, thank you very much for this presentation and more importantly for update of how well our police department is doing with our city. We couldn't be more appreciative to all the men and women that have been risking their lives technically because of everything that's going on. But as we've celebrated 30 years of community police awareness raising with National Night Out,
yes.
as it happened or it went on yesterday for many of us, I can actually state that when I started, we started with three crime watch groups, and now we went up to seven. Of course, we have new areas, so the numbers have increased. But I believe that it has to be because of the efforts that we work together.
Yes.
And as we talk about this National Night Out and community policing awareness raising, as well as combining or putting together the faces of the community and the police that are in the neighborhoods. So thank you very much for all of them that participated yesterday that went to all the National Night Outs from, you know, from Northwest to Southwest, because I represent both. But they were all very helpful in also
good.
Informing them. As we talk about awareness,
yes.
we talk about what we need to do, what we need to work on, get on the 311 app, get on the 911. Don't take anything for granted. Just, you know, call the police because we need to make sure that, you know, you're also safe. And as I state that because there was a lady that she said that her and her husband went at 4:00 in the 4:30 in the morning
on her way to work, and there was somebody in the car. And she said, I went and told them, what are you doing in my car? And I was like, well, you need to be careful. Don't risk your lives, because, as she said, after that, I went into my house and I locked all my doors because my daughter and I stayed alone. Well, that's, you know, a risk that she was taking. So we told them, and Chief was there and told them, don't do that. Just call the police.
Yes.
Tell them, get identification. You talked about the license plates, get the description of the vehicle, et cetera. But at 5 in the morning, I don't know if they can get all of that. But still, it's communicating, keeping them aware of what's going on, telling them what they need to do to help this community, for us to be able to have this great quality of life and beautiful, vibrant city continued with low crime, as you stated, and you keep on talking about it. One thing I also talk about is how we reduce the crime, and that is with these crime watch groups.
Yes.
It's not only that we have them, but to maintain them, because there are some that, as you stated earlier about, you know, it's very important that we meet once a month.
Yes.
As opposed to once a quarter, et cetera, because that way you not only talk about what's going on and what's the latest, but you also inform them and you also keep them engaged. And that's also very, very important, because as you go through the quarter, some may say, well, we don't need to meet.
Right.
But I think this is like the most important meeting everyone should have.
Yes.
Across the city. So, again, thank you very much. You have your something about call and report. What did you say? If you see
something, say something.
Thank you.
Or start snitching is what I've been trying to really emphasize.
We can use another word.
Plain spoken. You know, I'm from Oak Cliff now, so start snitching.
Exactly. Yeah. And another thing is back on awareness and informing, especially the how I've been hearing what the senior citizens are talking about and how they take advantage of them and bullying them. And so we need
scams.
To also talk to them about how not to take everything, you know, saying that it's good and just, you know, be able to buy it or participate in that. So with that, Mr. Gonzalez, as you have heard from many of our colleagues, that this is like one of the most important departments in our city, which is the police. So we need to work with them to be able to keep them there, keep them happy, and keep them to continue to help us in protecting this wonderful, beautiful, vibrant city of the city of Dallas. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinen.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Chief. As most of my colleagues have already done, I'd like to heap praises on you and your department. The city just feels safer. The department feels more responsive, and especially with the neighborhood policing model, there's a lot more engagement between the community and the officers, and I want to continue to encourage those driving through the neighborhoods, having the windows rolled down, just saying hello to people, because that makes people aware that the officers are there and available to them. You already stole a little of my thunder, but I wanted to reiterate the VIP and Crime Watch and how important that has been, certainly in North Central. In North Central, you and Chief Reyes allowed a model by which we actually had an officer assigned and dedicated to kind of lead that effort. It has had tremendous results for myself and for Ms. Grayson and for Ms. Gates with regards to the activity in those crime watches and, indeed, with the reduction in crime in those areas. So I'd encourage you to continue to roll out that model. That leadership component is really important. Asking individual neighborhoods to create their own crime watch is okay, but they don't really know what that model is. They don't really know how to do it. And literally having a person that says, here's step one, here's step two, here's step three, and walking them through it is tremendous. And the second piece that has been so successful in North Central is the communication has really been handled by the officer in North Central that's managing those programs for us. So they get consistent communications, and there's a communication model that he's utilizing. I think he's utilizing it really well, worth rolling out, including the ability. I was talking to Officer Lutz yesterday about allowing the council members access into that communication model so we can see also what's going on in our selective crime watch area.
And just to mention Officer Lutz, he comes from corporate America. I always want to be a police officer. He's just a fantastic communicator. We got another officer like him named Trusty who came and did some of the same type of work. And we had an event, and one of our corporate sponsors hired him away from us recently to do the same thing for their company. And it's just really, I think we're just on the right theme, kind of the right effort to really communicate to communities, be engaged with them in a specific way. And it's an effective strategy, I think, better than trying to arrest your way out of it only.
It really is. And you said an interesting word. You said another officer like him. It does take kind of a unique personality just to always be on this and drive it. So definitely keep the eyes out for those officers. You may see him out there and say, okay, this is the guy. I did want to ask you a little bit about recruiting and new classes of officers coming through. I understand you had a little bit of a challenge filling some of our classes, and do you want to address that a little bit? And have
somebody
help you with
that? Sure. We start out the year with our attrition. We try to make a best guess analysis of what the attrition will be when throughout a fiscal year to make sure we are right at our goal and not under or over. Early in the year, attrition was slower than we anticipated, and so we had to pull back some of our hiring so we wouldn't be over budget. And then at the end of the year, the last 3 months, attrition was much greater. If you all recall, there was a pension amendment that occurred, and this October was the third year of that pension amendment that required pensioners who were active in their service to pay more into the pension. And that seems to have been a little bit of an incentive to retire more than we would normally have at this juncture of the year. Most retirements are at the beginning of the year and not at the end of the year. It was just the opposite this year, to the tune of about 20 officers. And we'll come back and pick that back up in these first new classes for the new fiscal year. And so it'll be a wash at the end of the day.
And are you able to fill the classes?
Yes. Oh, definitely. We still continue to have half of our classes be former military,
okay,
for the drawdowns of the wars, and then the other half are people from the area, from Dallas and from North Texas, those suburbs. So we have pretty good recruiting recruits coming in wanting to be Dallas police officers. Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Allen?
Very quickly, second round here, but without question, public safety, anytime we go out and we speak to our HOAs, public safety is the number one issue. And then behind that, I can tell the crowd that in my neck of the woods, crime is down 30%. But if they've had crime, they don't believe it. So it's
right.
You know, so perception is the key.
Yes.
And then back to the winning the hearts and minds in the community is the key to the future success. I think it's very important for each and every one of us council members to find the positive things and talk about the positive things. It's easy for the lazy man to always come up with the negativity and report the negativity. I'm glad you pointed out that on some of these property crimes that maybe the disputes might be, as we said, an audit difference deemed immaterial, further investigation waived.
Yes,
immaterial.
Sir.
And but people want to harp on that, and that goes back to the negativity. We want to challenge then the perception
right.
of that, and that I find that moving citizens in the wrong direction. You cannot challenge the fact, as you said, the violent crimes. And the reality is, you have if you live in this great city, you have a 0.6% chance of being involved in a violent crime.
That's
0.6%. So. You don't want to be that 0.6%, but you want to be the other 99.4% that will not be involved in a violent crime. And but the positive side of things, we need to talk about it. I do have a hot spot for us in Aldea through the hard work of men and women in blue, the Community Prosecutor's Code. Well, guess what? Those multifamilies that are there, one of the highest density in the area, now they're up to about 90% occupancy rate. I have two elementary schools in that area, and both of them have had to add classrooms. And the reason they've had to add classrooms is because of these hardworking, working-class folks that are moving there for a clean, safe, enriching environment. And that's economic development. At the end of the day, those multifamilies have spent millions of dollars improving those. And so the tax base has gone up. And these folks are living in a cleaner, safer, enriching environment. That's all they want. And it's because of the hard work of you folks that have done that and the rest of them. Economic development. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Just to close, a couple of things. One, I hope that we as a council do not segregate these numbers in crime and domestic violence. Okay? We haven't talked about it today.
Yes.
But domestic violence is the most insidious crime we have in this city. 13,000 cases this last year. Okay? And somehow I was talking to somebody in the media the other day, and they said, you know what? He says, we don't even kind of look at domestic violence as real crime. And I mean, I thought that was a good reflection. I think that's true of us as a council, of us as a community, that somehow that's a different thing. And I know it's a major attention to you.
Yes.
And I know we've got a force working on it. And we're making some difference. And so my hat's off. I just want to say that to kind of put it on the top of mind that these are real crimes against real women. And many, and some of them end up getting killed.
Yes.
And then that homicide happens. So I think that's important. Second, I want to jump in and patting you on the back, not on these numbers, which I think are great, but I think how you have dealt with some difficulties. Because as any of this stuff has happened, we've stubbed our toes in some things.
Yes.
And it's not tripping and making a mistake. It's how you deal with those things. I'm pleased at how we've jumped on our 911 situation. That was a black eye for the city.
Yes.
And I think you recognized it and you dealt with it. I think the way you have disciplined our police officers, I have the highest respect for our men and women in blue. But when they do something illegal and wrong, they need to be dealt with. And I think your firm hand of justice on this is something I respect. And I just wanted to say that publicly to you. It's difficult to do that.
Very
I know.
Difficult. Yes.
It's one of the hardest parts of your job.
Yes.
And you have dealt with some tough issues, looked them in the eye, and haven't flinched. The third thing I just wanted to say is that history rarely takes place in a day or a year. It really does happen over a decade when you look at kind of how this, and we talk about policies and economic development, and we can act like we know what's going to happen, but we really don't. We can't foresee the future. Today's a good meeting because it gives you a chance to reflect, and I thought your presentation and how you told that story was very good. A lot of it had to do with leadership and our police officers. But you know what? A lot of it had to do with people around you. The city council, the decisions they have made in the last decade on this issue, you guys should be so proud. The ones that have been here, I guess, coming up on 7 years, and the folks that the Linda Coops, the Pauline Medranos that were here, guys, those were tough budget discussions. And I think rarely do public servants get to look back over a year and say, I made a difference because of this. Furthermore, you work for city management. And
yes.
Mary Soom, for 8 years, has been city manager in that time. And to see that result, I always say about leadership, just show me the results. Show me the results. And when I see results like that, you see excellence. And I know AC, you and Ryan have gone back and forth with this. So I just thank you guys for your leadership, for Mary's leadership, for the council, and for Better Dallas, Safer Dallas and their community.
Yes.
And what they've done. It has been a team effort. And I think it's a day of celebration for the city of Dallas. So thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you very much, Mayor.
Yeah. With that, I'm going to ask AC to come in and do this briefing. I think you can get this briefing done. I don't know how much people are going to want to talk about it, and then we'll kind of decide where we go from there. Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm given the shortness of time, I'm just going to go very quickly over the briefing to just point out a couple of items. We're on the second day of our new fiscal year, and on the second day, we're going to be talking about the following fiscal year and some of the planning that we're going to be doing for that budget. I think what you just heard from the police chief is a testament also to an aspect of it of management of planning the work and then working the plan. He talked about how their strategic plan has been revised, and what we're talking about today is how the city's overall plan is going to be looked at by you in the context of a budget. One of the things that's mentioned in this briefing is a number of plans that are underway, and if you have not already found this for Dallas, Adelante Dallas, you need to. You need to become very familiar with it, because that is what we use as staff to see about how we structure all of the various plans that we have for operations throughout the city. Now, the first number of pages in this briefing talk about the various terminology that we use in strategic planning here with the city. On page 4 is the overall pyramid that captures all the main terminology of mission and values, the overall services, and the like. It comes down then to key focused areas that we establish, goals and objectives, etc. Some of the data that is there identifies what we are currently working with in terms of the various goals, objectives that have been set by previous council members. And I'm going to just leave that for you to absorb over the next few weeks and months, because we'll be talking about these objectives in various committees, individuals, conversations with you all. And coming in January, we'll be looking to have a retreat, which will be getting into this detail on the various aspects of our strategic planning in a retreat that we're currently focused on I believe it's the 16th and 17th of January. Now, in that same month, in January, we're also going to be having our first projections for the following fiscal year. And then that work will continue on through the spring, having presentations on the budget to the council as we refine our bids and get some sense of direction from this council. Now, what I wanted to also mention very quickly was, if we'll go to slide 22. On slide 22, the theme words of what we're looking to do is, and these are, by the way, similar words that were used by the police department just a minute ago, is energize, innovate, and engage. And with that as our themes, we're working on a number of initiatives which certainly do not represent the complete list of all the things we're doing throughout the city, but rather just point to some of the things that we're looking to really focus on aspects that we have been hearing from you all, we've been hearing the community, and certainly things that we have brought to the table as far as our own concerns. But enhancing people planning, there's been issues with regards to our recruitment, hiring, etc. We're going to be focused on that. We're going to be re-energizing our customer service training. The focus on infrastructure maintenance is something that we're going to be really focused on this coming year. Relaunching the ZIP teams to get refocus on efficiency so that we can bring some ideas with regards to that in the future. In terms of innovation, looking at establishing what are the best practices throughout the country, and take advantage as best we can of new technologies wherever they might exist, and see how they can apply in our operation. Rethinking some of the service deliveries, and we've talked about this in terms of outsourcing, civilianization in the police department, the neighborhood resiliency, which is really looking at how we might rethink how we dispose of property or how do we work with the community in terms of keeping up with vacant lots, et cetera, et cetera. We're also going to be looking at our paramedic, our EMS response, and see if we can refocus from just responding in emergency to actually being involved with our hospital community on prevention. In terms of engagement, on the next slide, it was mentioned earlier about big data and open data and what that means as far as smart cities. All of those have elements about what we're going to be able to do with the data that we keep on an everyday basis and make that more available in the community. Looking to invite the community and the business input on a variety of different topics, including new forms of transportation for hire. A little bit of a sore topic, obviously, but still one where we want to bring to the staff's attention what are those different notions of how that function can be delivered, realizing that there's a number of variations to the theme that are being created as we speak that are causing us to rethink about how our enforcement is done, how it can be best handled. As far as social media, there's a number of examples of what we are doing currently with Dallas City Newsroom, and we have in the appendix information with regards to what Frank and others are putting together that are a myriad of different outreach efforts. But we're also looking at social media in our emergency management and the police department, et cetera, and getting a number of followers there. So over the next several months, we will be taking the next steps on 26, which is really coming to each of the committees with an idea of what are the index cities that we should be looking to when we compare ourselves, whether they're national or regional, identifying best practices, conducting a SWOT analysis so that in January we can present some of that information for your review, and then looking once again on about the January the 16th and the 17th at a retreat to see about dealing with refining, relooking at this strategic plan. With that, any questions? And I think we got through this.
Thank you. So why don't we take questions? Ms. Grayson? Okay.
HC, I just wanted to ask you about civilianization in the police department. What exactly does that mean?
As the chief was mentioning, there's some particular jobs that are currently being done by uniform officers which could be done by civilians. Crime analysis, as an example, some of the recruitment of our police are currently done by uniform officers, which if done by a civilian would cost a good bit less. And so we've challenged the police department to not only do the great job that they're doing now in terms of fighting crime, but how through the use of civilianization and technology they can do it more efficiently.
You know, having been here for a while, I see this come and go. We staff up with civilians, and then when we need to cut the budget, those are the first ones that get cut. And then we staff up with civilians, and then we cut them. So,
yes, ma'am. And me being here when all of this on the 3 per 1,000 got going, actually, I'm well aware of the hazards of that. And I have some thoughts about how we might be able to structure in a way to protect against those that kind of ebb and flow with our civilians. I recognize that at the end of the day, we need to have uniforms out in patrol. However, there are other jobs that are currently being done that might be able to be with uniform officers that could be done just as well or even, sometimes even better with civilians at a less cost. And that's what we're looking at.
No, I agree. I mean, I agree with that because for years I've said that we shouldn't be training officers and the amount of money it takes to do that and then put them at a desk job unless they're injured or something. So, no, I really agree that we should be using more civilians. It's just that every time we do that, we seem to backtrack and let them go. So if we can find a way to staff up with civilians, it is the right direction.
A very legitimate concern, which we have to address.
Yeah. No. Thank you for the information.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Anybody other comments? So I just want to reiterate a little bit. We're talking about next year's budget that we're all going to be voting on. Okay? And we're going to get into a meeting next August and September, and we're all going to be frustrated because we weren't being heard. So we're going to start this early. He's just telling you some things that they're working on for the next couple of 3 months. They've got a lot of hard work to do. Some of them are going to be briefed back to the council, some public safety issues, some transportation issues, some other things that are going to be done. In January, we're setting the date for our offsite. At that point, it's going to be a very meaty discussion. We're going to go through each of the strategic areas with a brief presentation, and that's the time that you can talk about it. At that point, we start to get our first cut on the financials, and we'll have several meetings on that. So hopefully when we get to next August, we'll have done all the work, if we do the work this fall and next spring. So thank you, AC, for that. Mr. Atkins, you want to close?
Yeah, AC, I know we always talk about a budget, and I understand your strategy plan and everything, but I wish that we come up with a strategy of how we have new revenue. And I don't see that, you know, in there, but I think that's a big deal. You know, we're talking about a budget.
Are you,
but what
are you
about
Mr. Allen or Mr. Atkins?
Allen, you know, we're twin. Trading plays, Allen? Trading plays. But what we're going to do, how we're going to do it, but we need to start early. What is our new revenue? What we need to reinvest in our old asset to bring more revenue. And the reason why I say that right now, we are thinking about Dallas Executive Airport. The commemorative Air Force is trying to get there. But we have a general aviation airport that 1,000-acre land, which is 600 acres, is undeveloped. That we can take that land, put in aviation land, take that land, put back on the private side for profit. So we go back to the general fund. We can do more with new revenue and new development. So we just need to kind of think out of the box.
Yes, sir. Totally agree. There's other revenue opportunities that are really kind of embedded in some of this, but you're absolutely right, and we will be thinking about that.
Great. All right, let's take our afternoon speakers, Ms. Rios, and see what let's try to get those resolved. And thank you, AC. We've got the press conference doesn't start till 12, so and the bands are downstairs for those of you.
Your speakers begin with Linda Nguyen and Rafael Pendozzi. We'll first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any individuals making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council will be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. You will address your comments to Mayor Rawlings and state your name and address for the record. Again, your first speaker is Linda Nguyen. Not present. Rafael Pendozzi, if you'll come up to the podium, sir, please. And you may begin speaking.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Rafael Pendozzi, sculptor and doctor of philosophy. Not education. I've lived in Dallas for about 43 years. I'm here today on behalf of the Rose Garden Incorporated, owner of the property located at 2312 Grand Avenue, as a whistleblower, because I am convinced that thousands of people are being ripped off every day by the Water Department. Here's what happened to us. Our building is vacant, and our average water was about $30, $40 a month. Suddenly, in May 2013, we received a bill for $1,600. We immediately checked the water meter, which, with our usage, was spinning very, very fast. Immediately, we reported the problem to the Water Department, which sent a man to replace it. This man admitted before two witnesses that the old meter was malfunctioning. The new meter was fine, showing absolutely no passage of water and no leaks. Afterwards, we received a notice from the water department that the old meter was 99% accurate. We insisted vigorously without that, in our positions, that the old meter was broken, unsuccessfully and hopelessly. The department was and remained inflexible and refused to adjust the bill. We have tried to contact the city manager, who refused to hear our problem. Meters are mechanical devices, and like all the others, can go wrong. We wanted to conduct our own investigation and ask the department for the name of the worker who replaced the meter and hire an engineer to inspect the old meter. But again, the department ignored our request. Now it is clear that the department is trying to cover up even the continuous continues to maintain that the water bills are realistic, the one they sent, of course. Mr. Rader and Ms. Puckett, who run the department with very heavy hands, tried to make me admit that there was a leak. I had my plumber call them and to testify that there was no leak. Now, a reflection is mandatory at this point. Water is a natural resource, not a commodity.
Mr. Rednosi, your time is, your 3 minutes is up.
Yeah, just to conclude, just one.
Go ahead.
Right.
Just conclude, real 5 seconds.
All right. We came to know that a few names of victims like us, you know, therefore this is a common problem.
Okay, thank you.
We wanted you to fix it.
Thank you. Ms. Davis, did you say something?
Yes. As far as, can you come up, please?
1 second.
This building is how old is this building, Mr. Pandoza? This building has been around for a number of years. I'm talking to you, sir. Mr. Pandoza?
I'm trying to locate you.
Right here.
Oh, they're over there. I'm sorry.
Here I am. This building has been, how old is this building?
Well, this is, I think it is the proud of South Dallas. If you want to look at...
Okay, sir, we're going to keep this real brief. How old is the building?
How old is
it's
the building?
It's 76 years old.
Okay. So this is a very, very old building with a lot of other problems, but just because of the aging...
I refuse to that.
Let Ms. Davis
I
speak.
I object to that, sir.
Sir.
Is it a 73-year-old building?
Yes.
Okay. So we can't agree to that.
Yes. Okay. May I add that this...
No, sir, you can't. Sir.
And Ms. He has met
it's Ms. Davis's
times.
Turn.
Now, a couple of years ago, and I can get with Chief Bright, the fire department came out to do an inspection on the building, and it did not meet some fire inspection requirement. So I don't know if those things were ever taken care of in the building. So, Forrest, what has happened? What is going on with this particular problem?
So with this particular issue that he's referring to, our water utilities director has personally worked to solve this issue, and she's willing to continue having that discussion. She's
okay.
Here now, and
we'll stand ready
to do that.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Well, I want to ask one question. Mr. Pedozzi, how many properties do you own in South Dallas?
Just one.
Just
I
one.
Don't own it. This is a. I'm
okay,
not
so sure. You don't own any problems, properties
no,
in
no,
South Dallas? Okay.
This is not
thank
my
you. Somebody,
property.
She'll meet with you right over there. Okay? Thank you.
Your next speaker is Ozumba Lunk, not present. William Hopkins. Mr. Hopkins will be followed by Kermit Mitchell, Sandra Crenshaw, and Dolores Phillips.
All right, let's go. Let's go.
Who are you talking to? Who are you talking to, man?
Sir, let's go.
I want to give you this, since you want to rush me. Rush and give Merrill Rollins that lawsuit from the where the city sued the RSR lead smelter and lied and telling us about they didn't know nothing about it. The first letter, I want to give Miss Alonzo one of them too. Get the mayor one and Miss Alonzo one. They met over there in West Dallas with the Health and Human Services Wednesday before y'all met that Thursday over in West Dallas. I had asked you about the insurance that the city already had sued, the state and the city sued, and the federal government. I wish Barack Obama would send somebody down here, Eric Holder, somebody, to check on this here where y'all trying to defraud the government and get insurance, get Obamacare, when the city of Dallas and the state of Texas sued the RSR in the 1980s. You've been sitting on the money letting the black people die. Mr. Alonzo know about it. The TIF y'all got for West Dallas just come just right there to the Hispanics right there on Sylvia, and it stopped. It don't reach West Dallas. Y'all was in West Dallas. Can I ask you about the Madden Nash Park? Since you want to rush me, I need you to hair up and ask me, did you go by the Madden Nash Park? Can you hair up and rush and answer that? You rushing me, now I'm gonna rush you. Did you go by the Madden Nash Park and see if it was the nicest park in West Dallas? Like y'all been lying and talking about it. Did you go by the Madden Nash Park? Shit, why you want to rush somebody? And the police. How much time I got? Y'all was talking about the neighborhood watch. The rapist in West and South Dallas was head of the neighborhood. Y'all talking about it was 100% Miss Hill. It's 100%. The rapist in South Dallas was over the neighborhood watch. And I don't know how it'd be 100% when he raped and robbed that many women. The Ku Klux Klan media never showed it. The Dallas Morning News never said nothing about it until it got 10 black women. And if they was white, it wouldn't happen. Since it's Dallas, I've been up here 15 years. As for the people that's dying in West Dallas, won't nobody say nothing. You want to rush somebody, but you was in West Dallas talking about health care, and Obama needs to send some FBI agents down here, and you and the rest of y'all to go to jail, because all y'all know, every last one of the city council members got a copy of where the city sued the RSR. All of y'all know. It's not one person here that don't know that the city sued and got health care for the people in this lawsuit. And you running over there at West Dallas with the health and helmets in the county. And I want to ask Obama to send some FBI agents down here to help us with this corruption in Dallas with all the city council members. And all y'all should go to jail if Obama sends some FBI agents down here to investigate y'all.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. Go ahead.
Just to clarify for the record, under the council rules of procedure, if individuals have handouts, it does affect the speaking time. Your next speaker is Kermit Mitchell, which is not present. Sandra Crenshaw is not present. And Dolores Phillips is coming now to the podium.
Hi, my name is Dolores Phillips, address P.O. Box 530236, Grand Prairie, Texas. I'm here to speak about the ongoing corruption by racism. I wanted to ask Mayor Rollins, would Chief David Brown be revered if he was covering up corruption of an altered 911 call, if it was committed by a black officer or a black call take center employee against a white person? I have handouts for you. One of the handouts I had brought 3 weeks ago, come to find out it was not made part of public record, so I'm doing that again. The brief letter shows, it states, "Dear Mayor Rollins and all council members, dirty, nasty, filthy, known corruption that will never, ever be conducive to sincerely building, growing, and the true oneness, genuinely inclusive of all persons. Altering a 911 call is unlawful tampering of government property. It was mentioned during last week's council meeting, the citizens in East Dallas that visit the Walmart are responsible for the visible trash. I stand before you to speak of hidden, discreet, but well-known, more dangerous, and inhuman trash. The 911 call was altered. Ongoing cover-up of this corruption is well-known. I find it brilliantly cynical to make your scapegoat while permitting making minorities and women your scapegoat while knowing that the altered 911 call exists and so does the cover-up. My concern is that if I had been a minority, a non-minority, to stand before you week after week about a 911 call that was altered, and no doubt that everyone knows the call has been altered, I mean, what would be your resolve? Even Mr. Caraway said that he was going to have someone talk to me. He's not here right now. That never happened. Everybody keeps pointing me in two different directions, and even the news media picks and choose what they want to air. And like on last night with Mr. Hernandez being targeted for inspection stickers, and how do you choose corruption of inspection stickers over corruption of a Dallas Police Department, of such an agency, altering a 911 call that has caused innocent bloodshed and continued to hurt many others because it continued to be covered up? And I will stand before you next week. Thank you for your time.
That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, no, okay. Thank you. Everybody can get on the bus now, and I'll meet you. We'll meet you back at 1 o'clock in the lunchroom. 1 o'clock in the lunchroom, we'll start our executive session. And you can eat wherever you want, but there'll be food here, okay, when you get back. It is 11:43 a.m., October 2nd, 2013. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act and receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda: the estate of Yolanda Guzman et al. V. City of Dallas and Encore Electric Development Delivery Company, LLC, city charter review and amendment process, legal issues involving gas drilling, and under Section 551074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to interview and discuss the qualifications of candidates for the position of the city attorney. Okay. It is now 5:38 p.m. October 2nd, 2013. The City Council will now go back into session. Amendment to Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act. We received advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda: the estate of Yolanda Guzman et al., the City of Dallas and Encore Electric Delivery Company, city charter review and amendment process, legal issues involving gas drilling. And under Section 551074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, to interview and discuss the qualifications of candidates for the position of city attorney.
Ms. Grab, adjourned.
And the meeting is adjourned at 5:39 p.m. Thank you. What?
No, you don't need a forum.
The lack of a forum.
No, you don't need a forum.